Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
Hey, what's up? And welcome to another episode, an exciting episode of Serious Issues, a weekly comic book podcast brought to you by King's Comics in Sydney, 310 Pitt Street, should you ever find yourself in sunny Sydney town, or kingscomics.com, should you ever find yourself on the sunny internet. My name is Andrew Levins.
My name is Siobhan Coombs.
And every week we review all of the comics that we read the previous week. Every week we seem surprised that there have been a lot of comics that came out. But
there's so many, and so many of them are bad. That's not true.
There was a lot of good ones this week. This is a pretty solid week.
It was a good week.
There was a lot of comics with number ones on them.
There sure were.
And that is convenient because we actually start every episode of Serious Issues by reviewing all of the comics that had a number one on them. We call this segment First Things First. And basically what this segment is about is letting you know all of the new series that started last week, i.e. the comics that have a number one on them, and which of those you should pick up and start reading. Pretty good description.
Good summation. I enjoyed that.
So let's kick off this edition of First Things First by talking about a new Image book called Flavor.
Yes, please.
This is a book written by Joseph Keating, who previously gave us many good books. Did he do I Kill Giants? Is that Joseph Keating?
No, maybe. That's
Joseph somebody. Can I look this motherfucker up? Joseph Keating is an American comic book writer and editor. Mm-hmm. So he's definitely written stuff in the past. I'm not far off with that. Okay. No, he did not do I Kill Giants. That was Joe somebody else. But he did do the series Shutter and the series Glory. And he has done...
I loved Glory.
He did a few issues of that. He did something else called Hell Yeah. He's done Savage Dragon stuff in the past.
Whoa. So big, important guy.
I thought I recognized him as like a Spider-Man writer, but whatever.
No.
I'm wrong all the time, everybody. Never listen to me. Listen to Siobhan. She's the smart one. Although she's not so much like right. She just knows when I'm wrong.
Yeah. But I am also like always wrong.
Flavor is a new series written by Joseph Keating with art by Wook Jin Clark and beautiful colors by Tamara Bonvillain. This is a kind of like heightened fantasy world where food is very, very prominent and important. Not unlike our world, except, you know, this food is almost magical in this world.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it's kind of the basis of their entire society. Chefs are like these kind of superheroes.
And so that's the setup is we see our kind of our main protagonist racing with her dog to try and get these special truffles. And she's beaten there by a no good other chef who employs dirty tricks to get ahead of her and get the truffles before she can. Then we learn more about this character. She lives with her parents who are both like wheelchair bound or unable to work. And there are people coming from... Sorry, someone just drove past my house with Eminem songs blaring really out loud. And now...
Cool.
Now I'm just going to do an Eminem voice for the rest of the episode. Oh, wow. No, he's rapping along to it now.
No way.
My mics are too good. It doesn't pick up background noise. But if you are, if you live in Parramatta right now, I hope you're enjoying this as much as I am. The rendition is terrible. Anyway, our protagonist, can you find out what her name is while I describe her life? But she is being researched by the government because the restaurant that her parents opened, they're not fit to work in it anymore. And so government officials are basically like threatening to close it down. But the protagonist's older brother is coming to like kind of live with them again.
Mm.
So it is like...
No?
Uncle. Sorry, my bad. Someone's brother.
Also, her name is Shu, I think. X-O-O.
There you go.
I assume that would be Shu.
This was a really, really beautifully cinematic comic.
Very Studio Ghibli vibes.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, especially with the emphasis on beautiful food. And it was a lot more kind of grounded than I was expecting after the quite fun and frantic fantasy chase scene at the start of the comic. But it looks like this is going to be very much about family and dysfunction and...
But also scary, like, demon ghost things beyond the wall.
That too. That is also a big part of this comic. There's a lot going on in this comic, everyone, and it looks beautiful, and I'm in. I'm all in.
Absolutely.
I'll be getting 100%. Every issue of this, and I recommend, I know it's exciting when a new cool image book comes along that's actually very good. And this shows potential as being a really, really great series. It's also one of those great books that you open up the cover and the you get a double page splash. The comic starts straight away, page two. There you go, real good stuff.
Absolutely, really, really lovely. Really enjoyed this. I got to read the first two issues, I think, in like a retailer thing.
Yep.
And it's great.
Cool. Awesome.
Super duper. Everyone get on it.
Amazing. So that's Flavor, issue number one. Highly recommended by the both of us. And we move on to Marvel now. Marvel put out four comics that had number one on them this week, starting with The Mighty Thor at the Gates of Valhalla, number one. This is a special written by Jason Aaron with art by Jen Bartel and Ramon Perez. The two of them kind of contribute about half of the art in this book each. And colors on this one by Matthew Wilson. And this is a book celebrating Jane Foster as Thor, but also just Jane Foster as Jane Foster, as we see the three granddaughters of Thor, who we've met a few times throughout Jason Aaron's run, travel back in time to... First, they go to some other places to come face-to-face with other Thors, but basically they're traveling through time to spend some time with their hero, Jane Foster, who inspired so much. And we learn that her legacy continues even further into the world now that she's not Thor anymore. And she's going to be playing a very important part in the next big Thor story, which is the War of the Realms, which is something that Jason Aaron has been setting up in his run for a long, many, many years now. We're finally seeing it. It's all kind of being led by Malekith the Accursed, the Dark Elf. We see the second half of this special taken up with more of him and his dastardly deeds as he kind of walks throughout the realms and basically sets up a whole bunch of horrible things about to happen to all the other realms that he does not like.
Yeah, he's not a nice man.
It's not even nice if you are a dark elf.
No, he's mean to the dark elves too.
He's no good.
I don't understand what his motivation is.
Yeah.
Just a no good Nick. But man, Ramon Perez is so great.
He's such an incredible artist. I hope that he becomes a regular on Jason Aaron's Thor stuff because he's a great fit. And I loved Jen Bartel's pages as well.
Yes.
They were great. We spent a lot of time celebrating Jason Aaron as a writer on his Thor run, but it's always had amazing art.
Mm-hmm.
And I love being surprised by like new collaborators that come on board that just immediately fit in perfectly.
Absolutely.
So this is a great little setup of what's to come, and also giving you a nice little capper for what a great Thor Jane Foster was.
Absolutely. Like, if you have, for some reason, not been reading Thor and listening to us go on about how great it is every single month, maybe this is a good time to, like, have a peep and see if it appeals to you.
Yeah. Go have a peep.
Have a peep.
Everyone, have a peep.
My recommendation.
Do you know Peeps? A peep in America, and maybe other parts of the world, is a gross marshmallow duck or chicken. Have you ever seen them before? They're like,
I have heard of them.
Your boyfriend is of the American persuasion.
Yes.
Go wake him up and say, "Hey Nate, what's a peep?" Because it's a weird, soapy sponge, like duck sponge, chickens
like,
that you have at Easter.
I don't think Americans understand what marshmallows are. They act like they made them, but every like American marshmallow-based thing, I'm like, this is crunchy. That's not a marshmallow.
Imagine if this loses us half our listenership. Like, all our American fans are like, look, you know, you can insult our gun laws. You can, like, you know, take shots at our president and, you know, many other parts of our ways of life every episode, but leave our marshmallows alone.
Never. I fight the good fight.
Do you make it
to the White House?
You like to bake. Do you ever make marshmallows?
Mm-hmm. I haven't in a while, but...
That shit is fucking hard.
Yeah.
My wife...
Yeah, not worth the effort, frankly.
My wife decided it would be a cool... Although she's just my fiance when she made this cool decision. For our wedding, she was like, we'll make all of the desserts ourselves. And we made like marshmallows and honeycomb. Have you made honeycomb?
Yeah.
Fuck making honeycomb.
But it was a really delicious wedding.
Yeah, it was a delicious wedding. But it was not worth the blood. It was, but you know, at the same time. Just buy your sweets.
Yeah.
You don't save money. Guys.
That's why bakeries exist.
Exactly. I love the community service announcements that this podcast provides. We move on to Quicksilver, No Surrender, number one, which is racing out of the pages of the recent Avengers No Surrender event, in which Quicksilver, the speedster, sped into a like a weird speed world and suddenly...
Yeah, it's the... Speed Force or whatever.
He blinked out of existence.
Marvel version of the Speed Force.
Nobody knows where he is, but this comic, this miniseries, which is written by Saladin Ahmed, who recently gave us the excellent Black Bolt run and is currently giving us the Exiles series, wrote this one with art by Eric Nguyen and colors by Rico Renzi. And this is a fun little tale which kind of sets up what Ahmed's voice of Quicksilver is going to be, because it's all narrated by him. And I really, really appreciated that. I thought it was really cool.
Yeah, I think he did a great job.
And then it's just kind of him frozen. The whole world is frozen around him, and he's speeding around. And then suddenly has to fight these creatures made of pure speed that look like him. There's a whole lot of them in this weird frozen world. So I don't know where this series is going, but I'm enjoying it. I think it's cool fun.
Absolutely. I don't like the colors, to be honest.
I don't like the art, to be honest, but I liked I like the writing. I like Saladin Ahmed. And I like Quicksilver. He's actually one of my faves.
I actually don't like Quicksilver. He's annoying, and he's never allowed any character development. He's never allowed to like move on from some shit. He's always going through the exact same like annoying character cycles.
I like him.
But he's like, I like this.
He's like a moody...
I thought he did a good job.
He's like a moody jerk in the same way that Namor is. That's why I like him.
Yeah.
Like, Namor's better, but...
Namor is better, yeah.
Also, according to this advertisement, Jeff Lemire is writing a Sentry series.
Yeah, that's interesting, huh?
Yeah, I thought he was exclusive to DC. But I'm wrong, again.
He was like, fuck that.
Marvel also gave us this week Infinity Countdown, Daredevil number one, tying into the massive Infinity Countdown event. I was assuming that this spin-off would not be written by the Infinity Countdown writer Jerry Duggan, but it is. He writes this grounded, Earth-based story with art by Chris Sprouse, Phil Noto, and Lee Ferguson. Inks by Scott Hanna, Carl Story, Phil Noto, and Lee Ferguson, and colors by Matt Yaki. This story is all about Daredevil's longtime kind of like, you know, thug foe. His name is Turk, who currently has the Mind Stone, which he got after finding it when there was a battle between some of the Sorcerers Supreme and Skrulls in New York City, and he just stole the Mind Stone and is using it to become the new Kingpin of New York. What did you think?
Yep. I mean, it did require quite a lot of setup from you. But this was fine. This was fine. This was pretty good. I quite like the art. It wasn't boring. What did you think?
Yeah, I thought it was like, it was just, it was fine.
Yeah.
To quote a good friend of mine, Siobhan Coombs, it was fine. but, you know, I am really enjoying this event. I think it is cool that, Duggan was able to write a spin-off of his event.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm not even like, I'm not mad at it. It was just fine.
Yeah, which is cool. I like Turk. Turk's cool. Turk straight up shoots a monk in the head. And then
I liked when he was dressed as Santa and stabs Matt Murdock.
Yeah, that was rad.
That was pretty good.
Lots of good stuff happened to this. Yeah. So look, mostly fine output from Marvel this week, including the next book we're about to talk about.
Yeah.
Hunt for Wolverine continues with another number one, The Claws of a Killer. We've talked about how ridiculous it is to launch 4 miniseries to hunt for Wolverine, but that's what they're doing and we can't stop them. Mariko Tamaki is writing this one with pencils by Butch Geis, inks by Cam Smith, and colors by Dan Brown. Tell us what happened in this one. I can't even remember.
Oh, man. Okay. Good Lord.
Yeah, you don't know either.
I read it. But what the fuck happened in this? Oh, my God. Too much. Too much happened. It's like Lady Deathstrike and Sabretooth come to find Dakin. This is where I start understanding what's going on. But before that, I'm like, there's some kind of Wolverine... Is Wolverine in, like, savage mode, but he's learned how to wear pants or something?
Yeah, so this is, like, a zombie book.
Yeah, yeah, okay, there we go.
So it's Sabretooth, Lady Deathstrike, and Dakin versus zombies. Which is not what I was expecting, and not what I would get Mariko Tamaki to write, but...
No.
You know, gifted character writer Mariko Tamaki, who is great at exploring the emotional spectrum of some of the quietest superheroes in the world. Let's get her to write a zombie book. This will be great.
I mean, why not? Look, I do like Butch Geis.
Yeah, the art on this is wonderful.
It's much better than the Greg Land cover suggests.
Yeah, that goes without saying, though. So, yeah, we kind of reviewed all of the Marvel books in, like, descending order of goodness. But
I have one more.
Oh, what?
I have one more that I read.
What was the last one?
X-Men Wedding Special.
Oh, Jesus. I didn't get this one.
Yeah. So it's 3 tales of mutant matrimony in the making. Nice.
Good alliteration.
With a really terrible J. Scott Campbell cover.
Yeah,
it's not good.
At least Greg Land didn't do it.
Yeah, well, but it's not much better. And then it's got 3 stories. One by Chris Claremont and Todd Nauk.
Uh-huh.
And it's like a very sort of dated... Kitty Pride, like, 101.
Right.
Kitty Pride 101 is she's, like, reminiscing before her wedding.
Reminding everyone who Kitty Pride is before she throws her life away to weddings.
Exactly. And then she goes and dresses like, I don't know, like a sexy barmaid.
Right.
And goes and works in a bar. Also, she works in a bar as well.
Decide on an age that Kitty Pride is and stick with it.
And did you know that Kitty Pride went to the past and married a man and then he died in the war?
What?
And then she came.
Like, that's previous X-Men lore, or is this just what happened in this
apparently
issue?
That's real. His name is Alistair. Alistair.
Like, he's, like, 2 names? His name is Alistair?
No, but it's Alistair, but spelt with a D-H.
Okay. Oh, cool.
Yeah, I was trying to communicate that. Anyway... That was really bad.
What is Colossus
story? The next story is Colossus going... It's illustrated by Greg Land. Excellent. And it's Du Bois hit Vegas. So it's Colossus and Gambit and Nightcrawler and Iceman and Pyro. And they go to Vegas and then there's an alien working in the casino and then they fight everyone and Colossus is sexually repressed and that kind of stuff.
And then the final story is them actually getting married?
No, the final story is Kelly Thompson, great, and Marika Cresta, and it's Kitty Pride's bachelorette party where she goes to stripper karaoke with the girls.
Excellent.
Yeah. And it was actually pretty fun.
Well, why are they stringing out this wedding that no one really cares about out so much?
Because they've got nothing else going on in X-Men. Everything in X-Men's bad. Except for X-Men Red, which is okay.
Yeah, well, more on that later. Colossus was one of the main heroes in the recently released Deadpool 2 movie. Did you see that?
I saw that last night.
What did you think?
I thought it was fine.
I thought it was fucking terrible. I hated it.
Yeah.
I can't believe...
Though, like,
for a movie that is like... And a character that there's like, oh my God, Deadpool's so subversive. What's he going to subvert next? And like, you know, there's a... Like, it's all about how like, oh, you didn't expect this to happen in a superhero movie. But
yeah,
the whole thing is based around the most boring superhero trope of all. And that is killing...
Getting the team together.
No. It's killing the girlfriend to motivate the hero. Oh,
yeah. And they fridged her mad early.
Is that Deadpool's motivation, but then it's also Cable's motivation, which has never been part of Cable's character in the comics. Cable is also motivated by his wife and daughter dying.
Yeah, which is like, and Nate then tried to explain to me who Cable actually was after the movie, and I was like, oh God, that's so fucking complicated.
X-Men.
God! I can see why they changed it. But I genuinely, the fridging was so obvious in the beginning that I genuinely thought that they were going to reference it, because they make a couple of like comic book references through it. I genuinely was like, oh, this is like an accepted enough thing that now they're going to make fun of the fact that they did that and bring her back in like 5 minutes, and they didn't. I was like, oh.
Yeah.
Oh, this is the real movie.
It's especially
funny. And then
none
of the jokes were funny.
Oh, yeah, I know. I thought that the first movie was kind of funny and charming.
I liked the first one.
Yeah, and this one I just thought was just all over the place thematically and as a story. There were moments of like, you know, there were references that I was like, oh, that's fun, I guess. But the fridging, I couldn't get over it. And especially like Gail Simone coined the term fridging and also wrote Deadpool comics. How do you not know? Like the writers of the movie got interviewed about it and they were like, we didn't know what fridging was and we're sorry.
That's pretty funny.
I love the idea of like them being asked about fridging and then like them going like, oh, what's fridging? Is that when you like get in a fridge and cruise down a sand dune?
Why would anyone think that?
I don't know.
Is that an established
thing? The Deadpool writers, man. Who knows what happens at a Deadpool writing retreat?
Yeah. There was not much that was... I really wanted to like it because of little fucking... Kiwi dude, but they didn't even...
Yeah, I didn't think he was used very
well.
Do
him justice.
You know who was great, though? And like...
Domino. Yeah,
Zazie Beetz, whatever her name is, from Atlanta. That was like...
She was the best part of the whole
give
movie.
Give her a fucking
easily.
Movie. Like, just...
Absolutely.
Just be in everything else. Deadpool can have a cameo in it and be like, ha-ha, my butt. And then, then just make... Like, her luck powers, which I've like literally criticized last week in a comic, saying I don't understand them. I understand
How
them
cool
now.
Are they?
It was like Final Destination, except like the other way around, where it's like instead of death chasing someone, death's like trying their hardest to avoid someone. It was great. Domino's awesome.
She's great.
If you have to see Deadpool 2, do it for Domino. But to be honest, just don't see it.
Just wait until someone makes a YouTube cut of just the Domino scenes.
Yeah, exactly. Like it fridges three women. it has TJ Miller in it.
Yeah.
And a stunt woman died.
And he's not very good.
A stunt woman died while doing the Domino scenes. So
really?
Yeah, I don't know, she wasn't even a stunt woman. She's what? Like a, she's like a pro racer. She was, and she died because they pushed her to do a stunt that she shouldn't have been doing.
Whoa.
Pretty hectic. Deadpool 2 hates women, everybody.
Whoa. I feel personally persecuted.
All right, well, let's cheer you up with
thank you.
Something that we've had in a long, long time in comic books. It's been, I can't think of, honestly, it must have been, I don't know, like 9, 8 days since the last Superman special. But we've got a new Superman special this week. Hot on the heels of Action Comics 1000 and then the Action Comics special shortly after it. We have Superman special number one, which is Escape from Dinosaur Island, which follows on a plot thread that was introduced on like issue 9 or 10 of Peter Tomasi and Patrick Gleason's Superman run, in which Superman and his son John Kent end up on Dinosaur Island, which is where we met the losers during Darwin Cook's DC The New Frontier series. I was really happy to actually revisit this moment, and I thought this was like, oh yeah, that's right, I used to love this series and this is why.
Yeah, this was a sweet story. I find all of the, like, very militaristic patriotism.
Which is a little bit bizarre theme of this series.
Yeah, totally. I find that yeah.
But like, yeah, this issue, I was like, well, if you're going to do that, I'm okay with it in the form of this comic. Because, you know, it literally stars the sergeant of the losers being brought back to the present, Captain America style.
Yeah.
And there are some... It was, you know, very much about, like, you know, honouring those who laid down their lives for us. Mm-hmm, but it wasn't as crass as them doing the War Memorial road trip over two issues.
No. But Superman does go, I hope that someday I can be as brave as a soldier.
Jesus.
But the next story was written by our boy Mark Russell with art by Brian Hitch, which I actually really liked.
Mark Russell doing very, very, very simplified Superman, like really just getting to the heart of what makes a Superman story work. And not, I keep expecting it to you know, be a little bit, have a twist or whatever. And then it doesn't come. It's just like this very straightforward, simple Superman story.
Mm-hmm.
But my favorite part of this was the final story, which is written by Ian Flynn, Archie Comics Ian Flynn, with art by Kyle Carr Andrews.
He draws My Kind of Superman.
Oh, so good. So, such a big square jaw. And this was about Superman and Maggie Sawyer, like, observing the ex-criminal. What's his name again? The Atomic Head, whatever?
Skull. The Atomic Skull.
The Atomic Skull, who is trying to, like, break good and work on the Metropolis police force. And it was really, really sweet and cool. And I want these guys to do a Superman series now, with this art style, which was so unlike anything you see on a DC book with Superman in it. Like, Patrick Gleason is the furthest you get away from the DC house style when it comes to Jorge Jimenez. Those like, you know, you pretty much only get very, very DC house style when it comes to Superman stories. And it was so cool just seeing this very stylized, fun, action-packed, kind of colorful artwork. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So of the three massive Superman specials we've gotten recently, this is by far my favorite.
Yeah, this was good fun.
Yeah.
I've actually, like, the last two specials, I've quite enjoyed.
Yeah.
I think Superman works well in, like, a short story.
Sure. Totally. Just not when there's like 10 bad ones like in Action Comics 1000.
Agreed.
The final DC number one book that I read this week was New Challengers number one.
Yep.
This is the latest in the New Age of Heroes line that DC started earlier in the year that keeps continuing, in which they place emphasis on the artist first, and in which case we have Andy Kubert doing pencils on this one, with Klaus Janson inking him. Colors by Brad Anderson, and then this has been written by Scott Snyder and one of Scott Snyder's proteges, who we saw do that three-part series Batman the Signal or whatever it was, which was like the Duke miniseries. Aaron Gillespie, I think that's who did that, but this is those two writers teaming up for this. This reminded me a lot of that Dial E for, what was that DC book?
Dial H for Hero,
that's right. I was like trying to think of a word that started with E that meant hero. new challenges. Four random people find themselves in a situation in which they die. And just as they die, they're yanked from reality and taken to this place where they are told by a mysterious stranger that they are now the new challengers. And so initially it is... three dudes and a girl who have, you know, drastically different jobs and outlooks on life that are brought together and told that they're going to become these, what are they, like, protectors of reality or some shit?
Some shit like that.
One of them is a cop, and he refuses to listen to this crazy stranger that's telling him his new life. And, leaves this weird void that they're part of, and then become like kind of melts. And then suddenly at the end, we get another girl. So this is two guys, two girls making up this new team of new challenges. And I kind of liked it. I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah. I liked this way more than I thought I was going to. I was like, fucking Andy Kubert and Scott Snyder, blah. But then this was actually pretty good, and like set up some fun mysteries and kind of modernized the challenges in like a pretty engaging way. And there was a cool bit where they were at the edge of the world and there were some giant crabs. And
yeah.
It's good.
And it also tied into Dark Knight's metal better than all the other New Age of Heroes books have. Probably because Snyder wrote both of them.
True.
Yeah, so those are the DC number ones. Are you going to continue with this one? I think I will.
I'll give it one more.
Yeah, cool. Now we move over to some other number ones that we read this week, including, I'm just going to go ahead and say it, my favorite comic of the week, and that is The Return of Aether. The second volume of Aether, written by Matt Kent with art by David Rubin. Number one coming out through Dark Horse Comics this week. This is Aether, the Copper Golems. Do you say Golem or Golem?
Golem. I don't know.
You have to be the one that's right. This had a great variant cover by Paul Pope as well.
Ooh, did you get that?
No, but I saw it somewhere online. It was really cool. But for those of you that can't remember, Aether was a series that we loved last year, in which a man whose name is Boone, Agent Boone even, who basically travels to this place which is called the Aether, which is this crazy fantasy place where owl rules don't mean bupkis, because there's like a monkey that greets you as you enter the Aether, and like just shit is crazy in the Aether. There are monsters and magic and all kinds
fairies.
Of wild fantasy stuff.
Basically
Boone is a man from Earth who is able to travel between the Aether and Earth. And time when you are in the Aether, you know, you'll only be in there for a short while, but then when you return, many more years have passed on our Earth, which is something that Matt Kent's friend and sometime collaborator Jeff Lemire is exploring in the Black Hammer Doctor Star spin-off miniseries at the moment. While that deals with like the death of the hero's son, or like the dying son of the hero in that series, this in two pages managed to punch me in the guts so much harder than that series, which I love. And, you know, Jeff Lemire is the king of sadness. Basically, this opens with Boone being interviewed by the government agency that employs him. He actually, when he lives on Earth, the only reason he returns to Earth from the Aether is because he can't eat food in the Aether. He has to eat Earth food. So he returns to Earth to steal food, and he lives as a hobo. He gets arrested. And he is saved by an agent from the agency that he works for. She starts saying, you know, like, you know, it's clearly that you don't care about your family. Like she said, and that, like, you know, exploring the Aether is way more important to you than anything that you might have on this Earth. And then he says, like, how do you know that? You don't know me. Who are you to say that? And then she reveals that she's his daughter. The months that he spent in the Aether were an entire lifetime for her. And like then cuts to him with just this like wide-eyed shock, this stunned look on his face. And the whole reason that she spent her entire life, this is like the first three pages of this comic. The only reason she signed up for this agency job was so she could be the person to welcome him back to Earth and be a part of his life somehow.
Yeah, I thought it was really sweet, and I thought it gave him, like, sweet closure, and I liked that it wasn't, like, this sort of, like, it was emotional, but it wasn't, like, super negative.
Yeah, because there is that, like, you know, if you are the only hero that can do the things you can do, your family has to sometimes maybe understand that. And, like, because we never see that. We always see, like, the superhero being told, you know, like, you're neglecting your family. Da, 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 da.
Yeah.
And it was, I don't know if nice is the right word, but it was interesting to see it kind of being like, you know, weighing up the good that you can do as a hero versus being with your family. I mean, I don't know what the hell I would choose, but if I had crazy ether powers.
Oh, I'm too sleepy for that sort of thing.
Right. So you would pick your family.
Yeah.
Boring.
Boring.
But yeah, Aether. It was such a brilliant return to this series.
Yeah.
So great. I didn't even get into the adventures that he actually has when he leaves Earth and visits the Aether. But the whole time I was reading it, I was like, man, this would make such a great video game. I'm playing God of War at the moment. You guys should get God of War. It's awesome. It's all about.
Is it good?
Yeah, it's like all about Norse mythology and like.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, it's extremely fun. If your knowledge of Norse mythology is limited to Thor comics, you can still get a lot out of it.
Nice.
It's a really good series. But yeah, this comic book series would make an incredible adventure video game. Someone make it, please. That'd be great fun.
But you have to keep the color palette
yes.
exactly the same.
Yeah, we'll just get David Rubin as like the kind of artist on just animate his all his stuff.
Yep.
That'd be real fun.
Agreed.
So now we move on to what could be, she doesn't even know it exists yet, but I'm going to guess it's probably Siobhan's least favorite serious issues segment of all time. This is the Garth Ennis double up.
Oh, God. There were two. I read one and I was like, I'm the best. Look at how selfless I'm being.
Garth Ennis wrote two number ones that came out this week. The first of which came out through Aftershock Comics and was called A Walk Through Hell, featuring Goran Sadzuka on art, who I know from Why the Last Man. Mm-hmm. He did that, the off issues of that series. And also featured Ive Sforgina on colors. You know what, Siobhan, since you're a bit in a selfless mood, why don't you tell us what this comic was about?
Police having inscrutable conversations. FBI? CIA? Something, something. Whatever. We don't care about the reader.
So this...
Oh, and then they go to a scary warehouse. And the people that go into the scary warehouse come out, and then they're so spooked that they shoot each other in the heads.
This book tried to do a lot.
And more people go into the spooky warehouse.
It opens with like...
I think they're going to get fucked up.
It opens with like bawdy Garth Ennis comedy. And then suddenly a public shooting, which is extremely heavy. And then a police buddy comedy with lots of references to social media and all the current problems of our society today. And then at the end, it's suddenly a horror book. So I guess this is a new horror series that Garth Ennis is doing for Aftershock.
And that shooting at the beginning was so awful.
Yeah.
So horrible.
Yep.
Yeah. That kind of immediately made me like, ah.
Yeah, he's done it again.
I don't want this.
You've
made me disgusted.
If you are a Garth Ennis fan, it's probably something you can find to enjoy in this. It's definitely different to anything that I've seen him do before. Not in the, like, weirdo comedy and then suddenly something super violent and upsetting on the next page. He does that a lot. But a horror book by him, I guess you could consider crossed a horror, but this is horror in a way that I've never
seen him horrifying. Do.
Yeah. The second Garth Ennis book was World of Tanks Citadel. Through Dark Horse.
Holy moly.
I'm guessing you didn't read this. Garth Ennis with PJ Holden and Michael Atiyah. I don't love tanks, but I do sometimes enjoy Garth Ennis doing a war story. He tends to do them a lot, and he's very good at them. In this instance, War of Tanks is a video game franchise, and I think by tying into a video game franchise, it allows him to work with a better caliber artist that he's extremely low budget war books usually can afford. So it looked excellent with some brilliant, brilliant tanks. If you love a well-drawn tank, Citadel's the book for you. But this is set in in the middle of World War II, and this is about the Russians as they kind of like prepare themselves for a long few years of holding one of the holding the Eastern Front. And this was another bawdy Garth Ennis comedy set in World War II in Russia with tanks, in which some of the troops go see hookers but are like forced to use the same hooker at once. And like, yeah, I don't, the war what? Stuff is great, but then you have these what? Like dumb comedy moments that I don't understand who they're for.
Oh, God.
That... Punisher Max, the Platoon, is that what it was we read?
Yeah.
I just longed for that again. I was hoping that I would get another hit of that.
You were like, I just want something really grim.
He does it really well. I know it seems like a weird thing to want, but he does it very well, and I enjoyed it. I did not enjoy this. So, unfortunately, both of Garth's comics this week, I will be giving a skip.
Good call.
So now, Siobhan, we play a game called Roll the Dice. for Marvel, Image, or DC. And I have to go back to the old school dice because we're recording
analog
in our homes. Yeah, our analog dice, our die. And so one is Marvel, two is Image, three is DC. So I rolled a five. I forgot. I'm so accustomed to the ways of our three-sided die that Brad made for us that I forgot that this has six. A regular die has six. Archie, my son, got a 20-sided die from a vending machine the other day. I probably should keep that away from this podcast. Whatever.
Hang on, I missed all of that. Oh, no.
Let's just do DC, then Marvel, then Image. How about that?
All right, nice.
I'm very excited to talk about DC with you because I'm just going to go out here and admit defeat. Siobhan, you were right.
I was right.
This Booster Gold arc of Tom King's Batman
Come
series
on.
Is fucking terrible.
That was the grimmest ending to a Batman comic of all time. A Batman comic that ends with Bruce Wayne shooting himself in the head while Booster Gold watches him.
And apparently he's been in a loop in which this happens all the time. And now Booster Gold can't get the blood off his goggles or thinks there's blood. Like, why?
Like fucking Lady Macbeth.
This is
washing her hands in the sink. Yeah. Like, man,
This was ridiculous.
I feel very vindicated.
Yeah, you earned this.
Because this was also like it was unpleasant to read. It wasn't even like, oh wow, that was like so controversial, but it like made me have feelings. It just made me like, I don't know, I did not enjoy any of that.
Yeah,
like Bruce. Bruce walking out of the cinema, going, "God forgive me," and pretending to punch people. Like it's just the least.
Alternate timelines.
Not for me.
Alternate timelines are such an important part of comics, and I feel like, you know, we see, in fact, we're going to talk about All New Wolverine very soon, which delved into the future, which I think you could compare this to this miniseries, and like this didn't really have fun with the world that we were in, this world in which Booster Gold has saved Bruce Wayne's parents and instead led to the creation of a very evil Batman that shoots people. This was just like I feel like I think you may have suggested this in the past, but like Tom King kind of comes up with like a message for his story and then writes a story after it.
Yeah.
It feels like that sometimes.
Yeah. And I'm a bit over his like style. I wish I had the words to describe it. I'm very tired.
Every comic is about PTSD.
Yeah, it really is. And I'm not saying that like superheroes wouldn't have PTSD, but also superheroes aren't fucking real, man. It's like, it doesn't all have to be so doom and gloom. Is Booster just going to be like a terrifying sociopath now?
Everyone will ignore this comic forever. Like no one wants that version of Booster Gold. In their comics, a Booster Gold that is frantically trying to wash the blood off his visor. Also, like this version was just like beyond stupid. Even at like the height of like him being in a world that was fucked up because of him, he never stops being this like really annoying Deadpool-esque goof. That's not what Booster Gold is.
And also not funny.
Yeah.
Like, Not a funny Booster.
I laughed a lot during this comic, but only because of how fucking ridiculously Tom King it was.
Yeah, like real over the top. And just like, I don't know, I feel like taking the DC Universe back 10 years into like some stupid, ultra grim, like ultra like serious, realistic version of itself. Just
chill out.
Chill out. Yeah. Chill out. A tiny bit. A tiny bit.
Siobhan is holding up to the camera the image of Bruce Wayne shooting himself in the head, reflected in the now never blood-free visor of Booster Gold. Although I do have to say, Tony Daniel, who did the art on this issue, did a great job of Booster Gold's hair in that panel, that page. His hair looks great.
True. Absolutely.
So I award this dumbest panel of 2018 an early winner.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we have the wedding and the Joker next, which I guess is going to be the follow-up story to the Joker story that we saw in the DC whatever it was called. What was that thing?
Yeah. DC Nation.
Yeah, DC Nation number zero. Yeah, this was strange.
Not for me, frankly.
The next topic I'm going to talk about is Injustice 2. Because it actually had a lot of similarities to this Batman issue in that it revolved around Batman and Batman's immediate family, so Alfred and Catwoman. And it also had Booster Gold in it. But it was just everything done right. And even though this is in a completely different version of the DC universe that ties into a video game, this series, every time I read it, I just wish this was regular continuity. Like, occasionally it does get a bit darker. A puppy dies in this issue.
Oh, no.
But, you know, it is meant to be like, you know, a less kind of permanent universe in which you have to imagine that all the characters in this universe are going to die at some point. All the superheroes, I mean, because that's, you know, it kind of ties into the video game. But just all the moving parts in this was, in spite of it being such a darker world, Batman's kind of like team of heroes now, which is like Steel, Booster Gold, Black Canary, and Green Arrow, like the few heroes that are on his side.
Nice.
Like, of course, Bruce Wayne always pushes anyone trying to help him away, but Black Canary refuses to listen to him and comes in at the last moment and saves his immediate family. And it was just a really, really nice end of this like issue that dealt with a lot of heavy stuff, in which Bruce learns that he has a daughter. And she's even more fucked up than Damian. She's the puppy killer. It got really, really heavy at one point. You know, you're dealing with Catwoman being shot in this issue as well. But it ends on a really light, nice note, and it just shows, you know, what a great writer Tom Taylor is and how great he is at juggling multiple characters in a very big, long story that's, you know, this is like 5 years in the making now that he wrote most of. He does a great job on this book, and so does the art team of Bruno Redondo, Juan Albarrán, and Rex Locus. I love Injustice 2, and every day that you are not reading it is a day wasted, Siobhan.
Agreed. When will I stop wasting my life? Who knows?
Let's talk about Justice League No Justice, number 2 of 4, written by Scott Snyder, James Tynion IV, and Joshua Williamson, with art by Francis Manapul and Marcus Toe, with colors by Hi-Fi. In which Brainiac has come to Earth and assembled 4 separate Justice League teams featuring both heroes and villains, and Amanda Waller has accidentally caused Brainiac's head to explode. So she is on Earth trying to right her wrongs and is hunted down by Green Arrow in this issue, which I love.
It's a great team.
This is just like a really goofy cosmic story featuring almost everyone that works on a similar level to why I like the Injustice series. It just uses so much of the team and so much of so many different characters that don't normally interact, and always keeps things fun and interesting.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Absolutely. This was like a really fun issue. The teams are really fun. The art's really gorgeous. The mystery is pretty cool. I love Brainiac. I love the Brainiac world.
Well, I reckon cool that this might bring back, this series might bring back the League of Superheroes.
Legion
of Superheroes.
Yeah, but yeah, for sure.
Do you reckon that's what it's leading to?
Yeah, I reckon. You know what's weird though is there's a double page spread ad for the event in the issue.
I thought that was weird too.
I've already bought it. I mean, I haven't, but
I'm already reading it. What more do you want?
Yeah,
good. Read Lord. It again. Buy another one and read this. Read that while you read this.
Please, Marvel put out 100 comics a week. We
buy our ones twice. So that was Justice League, No Justice. Still fun.
Still fun.
Did you read any regular any more regular continuity DC books?
I sure did. I also read Batwoman issue 15.
Mm-hmm.
Written by Marguerite Bennett with art by someone Blanco.
Recently announced as being cancelled.
Yeah, look. That seems fair. Fernando Blanco and John Rauch. Rauch. Whatever. Right. Wrong colours. This is like just the culmination of all of the stuff that's happened in this book over the last two story arcs.
Is this one of the last issues or?
I would assume so. She explodes her like ship base at the end of this issue and it feels quite final. I wanted to enjoy this whole series more than I did. I don't think that Marguerite Bennett had a good handle on the character.
Yeah.
But the art's always been nice. I think it's hard to fuck up her, like, look.
Yeah. So cool. Of course, yeah. She has one of the best costumes. Recently announced she's going to have a Lego minifigure made of her very soon. Isn't that
Holy
exciting?
Holy shit.
Better buy a set that I don't need just for that one minifigure. Don't you reckon, Siobhan? That'll be a good investment for the family.
Yeah, I think so. I also read another comic book that you don't like. I read The Brave and the Bold, Batman and Wonder Woman, issue 4. Written and illustrated by Liam Sharp with colours by Romulo Fiardo Jr. And this is the, like, hilarious Batman and Wonder Woman go into the Irish fairy realm to solve a murder. And it is continues to be that silly. But it's quite, like, it's good fun, I reckon.
Should I put on some Irish folk music on for you?
Yes, please.
You're forgiven, not forgotten.
So beautiful.
Thank you so much.
But yeah, Liam Sharp draws. I really like Liam Sharp.
Yeah, he's awesome.
I think he does
he's
like
great.
A hilariously, like everyone is very like pouty and sexy, including Batman. So there's like all these like massive boobied Irish ladies and then like super pretty Batman. And he does all the sort of, like, Celtic knotwork around the panels and stuff. I think it's fun. I enjoy it.
Great. How many issues left of this one?
Two more.
It's
a 6-issue mini.
You would hate... Do you reckon it would, like, it's going to overstay... Do you reckon it will overstay its welcome?
No, I actually think it's being really well-paced.
So you don't think it will linger? Cranberries
don't.
Were Irish.
Oh, right, so okay.
It's not even an attempt at a joke. I don't know what's wrong with my brain.
But also, isn't it sad that I recognize the Cause reference and not the Cranberries one?
Linger is one of my all-time favorite songs. Do you know that song?
Oh, yeah.
It's such a good song.
I'm pretty sure I only know.
Do you have to let it linger? It's beautiful.
Is that how good it is?
Yeah, it's
sounds I mean, great. It sounds amazing. Yeah. That's my new favorite song.
Great, excellent. So I read a few books from DC that were not in regular continuity, including The Wildstorm, issue number 13. Well, we were officially past the halfway point of this series by Warren Ellis and John Davis Hunt with Steve Buccellato even. And while I really like what's going on here, I wish they would kind of stop introducing new characters and new elements of this story and instead just let me know what the story is going to be about in this series.
No, everything's going to wrap up in like one issue at the end.
Yeah, it probably is going to happen like that. This is a 24 issue series, and it looks fantastic. The characters that we meet are really, really interesting and written very well, you know, in classic Warren Ellis snark. But I have no idea what the overarching story is. It is.
But this is something that I do really like, want to, and feel like I will buy and trade and go back and read. You know, because it's like it is engaging enough that I'm like, fuck, I wish I remember what this was about issue to issue.
Yeah, it's still if you could view it as like a series of one shots.
I kind of have to.
Yeah,
it's good fun.
There's some great stuff in here, but yeah,
absolutely.
We're now dealing with some aliens.
Yeah,
big wild alien plot coming up.
Yep.
Over to DC's Young Animal imprint now for Cave Carson has an Interstellar Eye, issue number 3, written by John Rivera with art by Michael Avon Oeming and Nick Filardi. Did you drop this?
I just didn't get to it this week.
I understand. It is like a bit of a hard task to set yourself up for, especially after we got two quite grounded issues that were linked to one of Cave Carson's old friends, this celestial kind of musician. Dying.
I like that you said it was grounded and it was literally in space.
It was about friendship though, and it was about saying goodbye to something. It was still like this big crazy space drama, but it was grounded, and then this is just completely lets go of that, and it's just like this insane like cosmic but also like ethereal in your own head cosmic adventure. Did I say cosmic twice? I stick by it. Too cosmic,
I think it's worth it.
But yeah, I didn't like this issue very much. And it wasn't necessarily doing anything different. I did enjoy relating to Cave a bit more through him being a bit more grounded in these last two issues, and then the story kind of losing itself, and that was a bit of a bummer to me.
Yeah, I sort of wonder if they had to kind of change plans a little bit now that the book has only got a couple more issues. Like, I sort of felt like they were building to something a little bit in the first couple of issues of the arc, and now it seems to have changed quite drastically.
What's funny though is that the backup, which is called Cave Carson Has an Educational Podcast, which is written by John Rivera with art by Paul Mabry, is about Cave and his daughter hosting a podcast together where Cave tells his daughter stories from his past. And in 3 pages, it's just a much more enjoyable comic than the main thing to me. So more of that.
Which is always a problem.
More of that, please.
Yes, please.
Final DC book came out through Vertigo this week, and it is Deathbed number 4 by Joshua Williamson, Riley Rossmo, and Ivan Placencia, about the amazing old adventurer who is afraid that no one will be able to tell his tale, who's hired a writer who hasn't lived the life that she's wanted to live to tell his tale. But everyone from his past is being killed, so they need to go and rescue him, not to save their lives, but to save his story from being forgotten.
And also to save his memories, because he's starting to forget things.
Right. I am bored of this series now.
I thought this was quite a good issue, but I understand what you mean. Like, I'm not necessarily like, ooh, I desperately need to know what happens. But I thought this had quite a fun sort of thing of him reliving his past and seeing himself through different eyes and feeling embarrassed rather than proud of his past exploits.
You
I thought that was like
also described issue 2 and 3, though. I think
that's a good point.
I think this series needs a B-plot.
Maybe that's what they're kind of setting up with now, like the writer's feeling bad about herself as well.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, it's still enjoyable. It's still,
I get what you mean.
It still looks really good. I just after such a cracking first couple of issues, it's now feeling a little bit like filler.
Yeah, you know what the problem is? The first issue had like 3 willies,
3 big old man dicks. Was it? No, it was the one dick. It was the one dick.
Yeah, but it was repeated a couple of times.
Yeah. Copy paste dick.
Yes, please.
So that is it for our DC reviews, unless you have some secret DC books I don't know about. What are you drinking, by the way?
Wine.
Nice. Wine from a Scotch tumbler. That's how she
I broke all our wine glasses.
Oh, well done. So let's move over to Marvel now for another great Tom Taylor book. In fact, two Tom Taylor books in a row. The first book we're going to talk about is his final issue of the all-new Wolverine. Issue number 35 of this series that Tom Taylor has written all 35 issues of. This one featured art by Ramon Rosanas and colors by Nolan Woodard, who I think has also done every issue of this series too. I might be wrong. This is the finale of the far into the future tale Old Woman Laura, in which a dying Laura, a.k.a. X-23, a.k.a. Wolverine, it goes on one last mission with her best friends, Gabby and Captain Marvel and Maria Hill and the Wasp.
And Hawkeye.
And Hawkeye, to kill Doctor Doom. Because everywhere is peaceful in the world except Latveria. And this was just fucking great.
Really nice farewell.
A really, really brilliant farewell that didn't do the trope that you were expecting this. You know, it doesn't give you the ending that I was expecting from this. You know,
totally.
I think the kind of character archetype of Wolverine, no matter which actual character is Wolverine at the time, Wolverine's always so ready to lay down his life to save everybody else, and it was so nice for them not to just follow, like, you know, she was, but it doesn't play out the way you expect this kind of story to play out. And for a grim story about, like, you know, killing someone in which many other characters die on this journey, it still had fun with this new world and these older versions of the characters. And
yeah,
it was just...
You can do death and serious themes without it being, like, bizarrely grim and...
heavy-handed.
Shit.
Yeah. Yeah. Wise words, Siobhan. Thank you so much.
Hey, anytime.
And when there's a Laura delivers a killing blow to a certain character in this issue, and it always is great to be reminded that she has spikes that come out of her feet too.
That's always a lovely thing to remember.
And I feel like,
because it's always a surprise.
It always is a surprise. they did it well in the Logan movie, and they did it, they did it well in this issue, really well in this issue.
It's great.
Yeah. Really, really great series. Again, like, you know, we said as much when we reviewed the last issue of Jerry Duggan's Deadpool run. But now that this series is finished in its entirety, go back and read the whole thing. This is one of the best,
well worth it,
Marvel books from recent times.
Absolutely, and it's going to be really interesting seeing Mariko Tamaki's take on the character.
Yeah, she's going back to being called X-23 now, and I hope they kind of give a reason for that that makes sense and doesn't feel cheap, but who knows. X-Men Red was also written by Tom Taylor this week, featuring art by Mahmoud Azra.
Man, I like him.
Yep, he's so good. And colors,
he's so
by
good at, like, casual moments.
Rain Barredo. This is a story about you know, Jean Grey is back and she's assembling her team, and in this one, because all comic book writers love using the word nanite, we are introduced to a brand new kind of sentinel. It's a sentinite. And it's a nanite that attaches itself to humans' brains and makes them automatically hate and want to kill mutants.
Nice.
And if a,
good job, Cassandra Nova.
And if a mutant gets one on them, they want to kill themselves.
Is Cassandra Nova not a mutant?
I can't.
But I suppose she... if they're her nanites, I'm sure she can do some kind of magic where she controls them.
Yeah, and so she's going through the world selling them to various leaders.
Various bigots.
Yeah. This is a really enjoyable kind of classic feeling X-Men series that still feels like new enough that it's enjoyable.
Absolutely.
And the front cover of the next issue is Namor in all of his glory. Although, actually, no, it's in less of his glory than usual because he's been...
way less of his glory.
Because he's been forced to put a shirt on.
You know what I think is an underrated part of Namor's costume? Is the bare thighs. We always talk about his abs, but I think it's more to do with the, like...
the speedos.
Tiny speedos. And the little foot wings.
Yeah, but his suit has... They've worked the foot wings into the suit.
Yeah,
they thought of everything.
I suppose that's fine.
He still looks good.
He does.
So that is our review of...
maybe that's all I really want with X-Men comics is, like...
thighs.
Just tell the exact same... yes. Look, Colossus's thighs are really iconic. Namor's thighs are very iconic. Now I'm distracted. But just, like, the same stories, but updated with different cooler artists. That's all I want. I don't want you to do new things.
You kind of are getting that, though. Like, it's like the...
Yeah, but they have, like, shit artists all the time.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Just keep the art team good. You're right. Ed McGuinness is the artist on the current run of The Avengers, Earth's Mightiest Heroes, written by Jason Aaron with an inker team of Mark Morales and Jay Leaston, and colors by David Curiel on issue 2 of The Avengers that came out this week, which follows on immediately from issue 1 where it left off, and we see Cap, Iron Man, and Thor join forces with Captain Marvel to try and take down a celestial that we learn is being controlled by Loki. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, Robbie Reyes, the Ghost Rider, is kind of flung into a fight against some big gross bugs with Jennifer Walters, a.k.a. She-Hulk.
I love this issue so much.
It's just non-stop action. It's quite reminiscent of like a Kurt Busiek kind of era Avengers book, in that it's just a big old fight, and some of the teams are fighting one thing and the other team is fighting another thing, and like, you know, there's a tiny glimpse of like Doctor Strange and Black Panther, but you know, you don't get much of them at all on this issue, which is fine. Totally. You know, because they're gonna show up in the next issue.
It's just felt like super classic but still updated, like even down to the fact that Loki is the bad guy. Like, that sort of is fun and satisfying as an Avengers first team up. But I loved like the way he writes She-Hulk. That was super fun. And I love his Robbie Reyes. I think he does like an amazing job. And I think that like, I love Robbie Reyes as a character, and I love Ed McGuinness. Like,
drawing him. Yeah. That's my favorite character that Ed McGuinness draws in this. Oh, actually no, his Hulk is so good. What do you think of Jason Aaron writing She-Hulk's dialogue? Cause you know, She-Hulk has always been, you know, the lawyer who is green. So able to talk with the full use of her brain. But now that she is She-Hulk, she kind of avoided being She-Hulk for so long that when she returns to her Hulk form, she speaks in the same way that we expect Bruce Banner's Hulk to talk. Like, you know, Hulk smash, puny thing, blah, blah, blah.
But she's like, I would say she's like a little bit more articulate.
Like, sure. She says,
but splitting hairs, I suppose.
Yeah.
I like it. I like the savage She-Hulk.
She says, you not cool. Hulk, that mean you enemy.
Yes.
That was very
articulate.
For Tarzan, sure, but...
She also goes, Hulk from Brooklyn. That was good. But I love the sort of Ghost Rider taking on the slightly Spider-Man role on the team of the kid who's like, why am I here?
Yes.
And so I loved his, like, he's being really quippy, and then his thought bubble's like, I hate my life, with 5 exclamation marks. I thought that was really funny and great. Good.
I love excellent. It. At one point on one of the panels, Ed McGuinness drew Ghost Rider in his car biting the steering wheel as he drives it towards She-Hulk. So great.
Like, so fun.
I know that this is like, you know, again, you know, this is pretty far from the Marvel House style that you see on their Avengers books for the most part, but it's so good. Like, there's a scene when She-Hulk hulks out, and there's a brilliant panel of her shoe exploding as she gets bigger. So great. So much fun.
So much fun.
I really enjoyed this. This is a really, really fun Avengers book that isn't doing anything necessarily new, but it is doing what it is doing very well.
Absolutely. Really great.
Did you catch up on Captain America, or have you dropped off?
I read this issue. I didn't catch up on the last one, but I did read this issue.
So this is set far in the future as we follow the troubles of one of the descendants of Steve Rogers. This is written by Mark Waid, with most of the art done by Leonardo Romero, but we have guest artists Howard Chaykin and Rod Reyes doing...
Howard Chaykin.
Chaykin himself. Chaykin always shows up for a Captain America special.
Always such a horrifying surprise.
Why are their faces like that? We also had colors on this by Jordi Belair, Rod Reyes, and Jesus Abertov. The most part of this is the descendants of Steve Rogers trying to find a cure for his son, who, in a world where everyone is given a little bit of Steve Rogers' super soldier serum, his body is rejecting it. This man, Joe Rogers, the descendant of Steve, finds out that there is a bigger conspiracy that is being led by the Kree to breed an army of Earth people to do, fight their battles. And he's trying to uncover it to the world, but also running for his life. And we see these great little guest artist drawn glimpses into parts from Captain America's past. And there's an incredible twist-a-roo at the end of this issue in which a cosmic cube is broken with the expectation that Captain America is about to jump out, but it ain't Cap. And
sure isn't.
And who jumps out will shock you.
Yes.
Prince Harry.
So topical.
Yeah. God help anyone listening to this in like July. Playing catch up.
Captain America's already a Nazi again. I found this like, I really like Leonardo Romero, but this is pretty, I found this pretty boring.
Oh, really?
Pretty boring?
I love this.
Do you like it?
No, I really, really like this. I think this is a great story for Mike Waid to end his run on. I think I actually enjoy it more than everything he did with Sumney on the Cap book this year.
Except for the Kraven issue.
That goes without saying. Kraven's the best. Daredevil issue 602, still reading this series, in which Daredevil is now the mayor of New York City. I keep reading because it's Charles Soule doing a pretty good job now that he's doing like more legality stuff again. That's what he thrives at. But the artist on this now is Mike Henderson with colors by Matt Miller. And Mike Henderson was he did the art on that Declan Shalvey written Wolverine and Deadpool, Old Man Logan and Deadpool team up book, which I really liked, and he's doing great stuff on the Daredevil book at the moment too. Really kind of like stylized and great emotive faces and stuff like that. But yeah, it's kind of cool. It's like Foggy's been brought on as like Mayor Matt's advisor, political advisor, and all his advices just don't be Daredevil, but of course he doesn't listen. It's fun.
Never listens.
It's the hand, him going against the hand, but in an interesting way.
Cool.
Yeah.
That sounds fun.
Yeah, it is fun. Mayor Daredevil. They should call it Mayor Devil.
They've missed a trick.
How would you spell that? Like M, just M, just put an M instead of a D, so M-A-R-E Devil? Or
no, I would M-A-Y-O-R Devil.
Okay.
Mayor Devil.
Mayor Devil. Okay, great.
It's not good.
So now we move over to Image this week. And I want to start off our Image reviews by talking about a comic that I'm worried that not enough people are reading. It's not a fun book to read at all, but it is an incredible book to read. And it's called Infidel.
People not reading Infidel? You should be reading
it. I don't know. But maybe you are reading it, in which case, carry on. Well done. You've made good decisions in your life, and I'm proud of you.
Congratulations.
But this is written by Pornsack Pishish, god damn it. I'm so bad at pronouncing your name, Pornsack. I'm so sorry. Pornsack Pishishot, with art by Aaron Campbell and colors by, and also he's also the editor of this book, Jose Villarubia. This is a creative team that I've never read anything of before, but it is a horror book with really, really interesting racial overtones that you do not usually associate with horror. Mm-hmm. I guess, you know, I mean, unless you talk about like Get Out or something like that last year, but this is a Middle Eastern woman has started dating a white man, has been welcomed by their family into this haunted block of apartments, and she starts seeing horrible visions of monsters and stuff like that that are kind of causing her to do bad things, and everyone is trying to, you know, not say racist shit about her actions, but also, you know, the world we live
it's quite racist.
It's really, really interesting. I'm definitely not doing it justice in my description of it.
No, but this is...
As I tread carefully on eggshells to describe this book, but...
No, but it is like a gorgeously illustrated sort of contemporary, socially relevant horror comic, which, like, horror stories often reflect things that we're afraid of in this time, and this is sort of very relevant, and it's interesting and scary and really brilliant. I really love it.
Yeah, so someone is dead because of the visions that our main character has seen. And in this issue, in which our main character is bedridden for the entirety of it, doesn't say a word, people are just kind of just accepting that she did what she did in cold blood because, you know, of the assumptions we make of certain kinds of people.
Mm-hmm.
This is a really, really, you know, eye-opening and just a real bummer to read, but very, very interesting, and I think should be read by anyone interested in a, you know, more politically relevant horror story.
Absolutely. If you liked Get Out, check it out.
Yeah, check it out. It's called Infidel. It's really good. Cut through Image. And this issue was probably the best yet. I loved the opener in which we kind of go into our main character's past with this different art style.
Yeah.
To represent her as a child.
And the art is crazy. Like, the scary demons are so, like, horrifyingly, gorgeously illustrated. It's amazing. Yep.
And they, like, there is a character, the two characters are kind of investigating.
Mm-hmm.
I love that part of it too. There are moments of slight confusion because it is trying to tell different stories and timelines throughout this issue, but it's done very, very
Absolutely
well.
Absolutely agreed.
Another very great horror book, but not in the way you come to expect a horror book to be, coming out through Image right now, is called Gideon Falls. Written by Jeff Lemire with art by Andrea Sorrentino and Dave Stewart.
Greg Smallwood. I got the Greg Smallwood cover. Very nice.
Yeah, me too. God, it's a brilliant one. This is a story about a man who is presumed to be crazy by his therapist that he's seeing, who has an obsession with collecting certain parts of rubbish,
mm-hmm.
And trying to build something that only he can see in his mind, which is a black barn. Meanwhile, we have a newly recruited priest come to this small town of Gideon Falls and immediately become a suspect in a murder case.
Mm-hmm.
And there's all these weird, unexplained parts of this town, which is a very, you know, close-knit town in America. And as different characters see different things and other characters seek answers, it feels smaller and smaller.
Mm-hmm.
And a real sense of dread as we start to learn what this weird thing is all about.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I really enjoy this. Andrea Sorrentino is doing some, like, really interesting things in terms of how he lays out the pages and different parts and different colors, and it's good fun.
It really adds to the kind of creepy vibe, that, you know, that sense of dread that something is about to be revealed that is going to be really unsettling.
Absolutely.
Yeah, this is an excellent series.
Really, really enjoyable. There's some really great horror comics out at the moment.
Yeah, and Image are pretty much putting out all of them.
Yep.
Dry County gave us its third issue this week. This is the one written by Rich Tomasso. And this is a Lou Rossi comic, which is, I guess, a new character that he's going to hopefully return to, mm-hmm. for these strange kind of 90s era detective, mm-hmm, stories. Mm-hmm. Lou Rossi is a aspiring cartoonist who draws cartoons that no one likes for a newspaper, but also has to, like, review movies to pay the bills. Mm-hmm. The girl of his dreams has been potentially kidnapped, and so he's trying to do some detective work on the side while trying to, you know, do all the work that he needs to do and pay his bills.
So enjoyable.
And no one in his life is on his side. And he gets tips from very strange sources, and there is a large sense of insanity,
mm-hmm.
Just like weird things happening in this world. The art style is very reminiscent of Daniel Clowes, and the writing style, I'm in no way accusing it of being too similar. I'm just saying there is a similar vibe to Dan Clowes's Like a Velvet Glove Cast in Iron, graphic novel, in which it is this character kind of, you know, bumbling his way through this insane world of shit that keeps happening to him.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
An excellent narration by him as well. First person narration in this is done really well, like almost like a diary entry.
Absolutely, on lined paper and everything. I really enjoy how different everything Rich Tomasso does is, and I think he nails all these really sort of varied tones. It's very enjoyable.
Of course, he's given us Spy Seal and She-Wolf and Dark Corridor, mm-hmm. in the past, and we recommend all of them.
I sure do.
They're good stuff. Also, this comic made me want to go listen to the B-52s.
It's nice.
Barrier, issue number 3, came out too. A lot of threes this week. This is the comic that's being released for the first time in print each week through Image, written by Brian K. Vaughan, Marcos Martin, and Munsa Vincente on art. And this is a an alien story from the point of view of a farm owner in Texas and an illegal immigrant who have been abducted by aliens and are struggling to communicate with each other. And the bulk of this issue was silent.
I only just realized that as I was flicking through.
Yeah, well, that's how good the language of this comic is. It doesn't need words to communicate what the story's about and what the characters' motivations are.
Yeah, so good. Holy moly, Marcus Martin is so good.
Yeah.
I'm doing a bad job of reviewing because I'm just saying that it's really good. But I like the colors are amazing. The panel layouts are so great. I love the format. Guys,
you said a lot of comics were bad this week, Siobhan, at the start of the episode.
Did I?
I'm gonna have to. We're gonna have to disagree with you. It's mostly good this week.
Yeah, I agree.
Final Image book that I read this week was The Wicked and the Divine, issue number 36, written by Kieran Gillen, with art by Jamie McKelvey, colors by Matt Wilson, letters by Clayton Cowles. This was another almost silent for half an issue in which we travel through time and see the end of two particular gods that I don't know if you know that this story is all about. Every 90 years this cycle of 12 gods returning as young people in the world who are loved and then hated, and then in 2 years they all die, and at the moment we are seeing the 2010 iteration, 2015, I think it's set, of pop stars who are also gods and also at war with each other, and we learn horrible secrets every issue. But this featured this incredible montage of the same scene happening again and again every 90 years from... It started in the River Nile, so the Upper Nile, in 3862 BC, and over the course of, 56, just shy of 60 panels, we caught up to 2014.
Wow.
Of the same one panel per every 90 years.
Wow.
It was really, really great. As like the costumes change, but the character models stay the same, and the violence stays the same as well. I feel like we are just catapulting towards the end of the series, and every issue is so full of emotion and action and betrayal and fuck. I don't know how this is going to end, but I guess in death.
How many issues does that have left?
I'm not sure. I'm sure it's going to maybe 42 or something like that. Okay. But this is just wonderful, and this will be an incredible weekend of binge reading for those of you that have not read this series.
Yeah, I am looking forward to that.
But I do. This is almost like a reminds me of when I used to watch Buffy in high school, and that
wow.
that final series of Buffy, where it was just like working up to the big end, and you know, you didn't know if Buffy was going to make it or not, and every episode was just so like world ending and insane. Mm-hmm. This reminds me of that. I like that I'm reading this serialized.
That's fun.
Did you read any other Image books?
Nope, that was it.
So now we move over to other publishers, and this is one of the great weeks in which three of our favorite books come out one after the other, and then we'll start this review with Fence, issue number 6, written by C.S. Picat, who was a guest at King's Comics last week.
Yeah.
In a Q&A session that Siobhan led. How did it go?
It was so fun. It was really, really great. It was good crowd. She's like incredibly smart and funny and generous with her time and knowledge. And I had an excellent time. It was really good fun.
Yeah, that's awesome. Unreal.
I did not know how smutty her books were, though.
Smutty?
Yeah, I sort of assumed because Fence is quite YA that it was also
right.
quite YA. No.
No. Wonderful.
Turns out no. Yeah. Excellent.
Buy some horny books, everybody.
Absolutely. I would say Fence is quite
6.
Horny.
It is very horny, but subtle.
Yeah.
With art by Joanna the Mad and colors by Joanna Lafuente. This is a book about beautiful young men fencing, trying to be the one of the few selected to be on the fencing team at their very select high school or college. And it is, I guess, a Western take on a sports anime, a sports manga, in which we, you know, are explained in intricate detail various parts of the sport of fencing, but really well worked into the story. And this is mostly about the different characters and their determination, the relationships between them all, and that brilliant, you know, first person narration as they work up the courage to be the best.
There were
so many excellent scenes. And like, this is like this arc in particular, in which we see every issue is about a different fencing match, as they try and, you know, make the cut. It's just thrilling.
It really
is so much fun. Yeah,
it's so fun. And like, if you like things like Yuri on Ice or Slam Dunk or things like that, she's very clearly influenced by them, and it's a really fun sort of queer book. I would recommend this to everyone.
Definitely, it's so great. So that's
fence. And it's such a good thing. Like, I found out that Boom actually approached her to see if she wanted to do a book, and like, I think that the things that Boom have done recently that have been so great is down to the sort of really progressive editorial staff that they have. So it just shows, like, I think that, you know, the Superman books would be a different place if they shook up the editorial a little bit.
100% agree, definitely. So shouts to the editors Shannon Waters and Daphna Plebel for doing a great job on Boombox books lately.
Absolutely.
And Fence is the first trade is out. It's pretty cheap.
Yeah.
You should definitely read it. Definitely pick it up.
Absolutely.
Assassinistas is another one of our favorite books at the moment, written, published by Black Crown through IDW. This is written by Teeny Howard with art by the great Gilbert Hernandez, and colors by Rob Davis. And this is like a kind of grindhousey book about a team of female assassins who have now grown up and had children. And there is someone who is targeting them. When we find out, it's because they have these deadly assassins have been killed by their children because they have stopped being assassins because of their children, and so this is about them trying to be brought back into the world of being sexy assassins.
It's so good. I love everything about this book.
It's just so much fun. It looks great. The dialogue's really, really funny and well done, and everything about this is like, just, it's a perfect match. Teeny Howard and Gilbert Hernandez, it's a perfect match. Who would have thought that a female writer working with Gilbert Hernandez would work so well?
It's so good. It's because I feel like the women in the Hernandez brothers books are always like, they're the masters of their own destiny, you know? Like, they're also like
two men in
yeah, exactly,
books too. Like, Gilbert Hernandez, I can think of two male characters.
They love women. They're obsessed with women. Women are the strongest characters in all of their books. And it's the best. I love the assassin going around with her baby and like a bulletproof little pouch on her chest.
Like a mailbox.
So good.
So good.
Everyone looks so amazing. Like the character design for Carlos back in the past, where he's got like the really long mullet and the big mustache. So good.
So good. Another excellent book this week is Bloodshot Salvation, issue number 9. This is co-written Jeff Lemire with Ray Fawkes, with art by Renato Guedes and Simon Ballant. And this was a book about the history of Bloodshot's dog Bloodhound, who, like Bloodshot, has a military background, and was used in the First World War as a way of helping British soldiers. And it's a real tragic story. He was bred to fight, basically, but he still loved his owner. And that's kind of like, it shows like, you know, how important faith, you know, being faithful is to Bloodhound.
Absolutely. Really great. This is the only kind of war comic that I want to read.
I was about to say a War with Dogs comic. Then I remembered that Garth Ennis wrote an 8-issue War with Dogs comic, which was terrible.
Yeah. I did not enjoy that.
Dark Horse this week published Usagi Yojimbo, The Hidden, issue number 3 of 7, written and drawn by the great Stan Sakai. And this is a cool little 7-issue miniseries about the Ronin bunny rabbit, Usagi Yojimbo, teaming up with the chief of police to solve a murder of a Christian in Japan. And it's, you know, just classic Usagi antics, but it's the best.
It's so fucking good. I think I'm having a more violent reaction to it because this is the first Usagi comic I've read, but I'm like, ah, how have I never been reading this? And I know you've been saying it for ages, but holy moly, it's so good. And it's so fun.
It's a series that it should be held in as high a regard as Tintin, in my opinion.
Well, I agreed with that very rapidly, but I cannot back that up. But it's really good.
Well, like, you know, when you've, like, once you've read five Tintin stories, there's some, like, you're not really, as you read a new one, you're not really learning much new or getting much new out of it. It's just
this more cool adventures. Really,
this perfected familiarity. Mm. It's like you don't want anything new from it. Whereas I feel the same when I read an Usagi book as well. Like, he knows what these characters do. You put them in, you give them a situation, and you just, you know, it's just this really comfortable read to see how they get out of this situation.
Absolutely, and it's fun to read something that's like just a short, sort of sharp, plot-driven thing in this age of sort of expansive, character-driven superhero comics. It's lovely.
Definitely. So Dark Horse also published through Berger Books this week the finale of the Hungry Ghosts miniseries.
I did not read
which is written by celebrity chef Anthony Bourdain and Joel Rose. This issue had art by Francesco Francavilla and Irene Coe. This is like basically a bunch of chefs gather to tell a bunch of Japanese ghost stories. In this one, we get the Snow Woman, in which it's like the classic story of like a sexy ghost visiting and fucking a guy. And he's not allowed to tell anybody of their encounter. And then the second story is about a village who eat all of the every single animal, like the birds, the dogs, the cats, the lizards in their village. And then a man with a cow for a head comes to visit their village and they eat him too.
He has a whole cow for a head, or he just has a cow head.
Right. A cow head. The weird thing about these stories is that they just felt like exploitative isn't the word, but they just felt like cover stories, like cover song versions, like crappy dubstep versions of good, was it Shinigami?
I don't know.
Kind of Japanese ghost stories. Mm. Like, just honestly, like what this should have been, Anthony Bourdain carefully selects his favorite Japanese ghost stories and assigns some incredible art talent to draw them out.
Or even like retells them with like a wacky food bent. That's fine. Totally. But like his like cool plot twists didn't seem sort of as cool as actual Japanese ghost stories.
No, not at all.
Having just read like a whole bunch of Junji Ito short stories, it's just not inventive enough in comparison.
Totally. I got a couple more to burn through. Did you read James Bond, The Body?
Ooh, I did.
This week?
I did.
Issue 5, written by Alice Cott, with art by Hayden Sherman and colours by Valentino Pinto. This is basically James Bond chasing after a bioterrorist. The whole series has just been about the extent that James Bond will go to protect his country.
Yeah.
And the effects that it has on him and others.
Yeah, it's starting to get boring now.
it's starting to get a little bit Tom King's Batman.
A little bit. It's just like I could do with less, just a tiny little bit less sort of self-searching narration and just a little bit more like action and plot.
Yes, definitely. I agree. But I very much enjoy the art. We haven't really given him a good shout out in the past. Hayden Sherman doing really, really great art. And there's a brilliant... The last few pages of this is James Bond plunges into dark water, where he does like very, very simple, like pencil work, and it's really, really effective.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Really good stuff. Great colors on it too, by Valentina Pinto. Are you still reading Lucy Dreaming by Max Bemis and Michael Deleonis? Yeah, there's like parts of this I really enjoy. It's out through Boom Studios, but yeah, I think I need to stop reading it because I don't enjoy it overall.
Yeah, fair enough.
It's another. It's just a big case of a 12-year-old girl talking like a 40-year-old man.
Classic. I don't think he's even 40 though. Oh, maybe he is.
He's, oh, whatever. But like, whatever. He's still writing like one. Final issue of comics that we're going to talk about this week is...
Whoa. I can't believe you are reading
the final.
That.
It's the last one ever. Good. Of this journey into madness that I've been taking as I've read every issue of The Archies, which is an Archie comics about a band that Archie and Veronica and the other
Reggie.
Ones. Reggie and Jughead. And
Betty plays the triangle or dances. Awful.
Yep. And every single issue has a real-life musician guesting in it. So this one had Speedy Ortiz. I don't know who the fuck that is.
No, me neither.
But she's a guest judge on the Battle of the Bands, in which the Archies lose to Josie and the Pussycats and then decide that enough is enough and go their separate ways, but then find themselves all in the same room at an open mic that Betty was singing at and decide to have one last jam for themselves. Yep.
Boo.
Super stupid. Why did I read all this? I don't know.
You hate yourself.
I guess I do. This is absolute evidence that I do. And this is absolute evidence that we read too many comics this
Agreed.
Week. But we're done. We reviewed them all. And we will read too many comics next week and the week after that and the week after that. And you can hear all of those episodes at the podcast service that you use right now to listen to this one. Or you can visit us at seriousissues.tumblr.com to find all the issues there. Of course, all our comics are supplied lovingly by kingscomics.com. We have a Facebook page, which is facebook.com/seriousissuespodcast, or a group, which is facebook.com/groups/seriousissuespodcast. Siobhan can be found on Twitter and Instagram at SiobhanCBG. I am at LevDog, LevDowg. And we can find the show, serious_issues. If you'd like to support the show, we would love it. If you want to kick a couple bucks, you get a bunch of bonus material slung your way, some extra bonus episodes, patreon.com/seriousissuespodcast. Thank you so much for listening.
Thanks, guys.
Have a wonderful week.
Absolutely.
And Siobhan, I'll let you sing the outro theme.
It is like an hour past my bedtime. It is 10:15.
You go to bed at 9
if
o'clock?
If I possibly can, yes.
That's amazing. That's inspiring.
Thank you.
Well done.
Not all heroes wear capes.
Good night, everybody.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
I mean, if you want. It's up to you.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Treat mom to healthy, glowing skin with Osea's limited edition skincare sets. Osea has been making clean, seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. Their Golden Glow body set includes 3 clinically proven bestsellers for smooth, glowing skin, while the Glow and Go facial set provides spa-level results at home. Both sets come in giftable boxes with savings up to $48 and free shipping for a limited time. For 10% off your first order site-wide, go to oseamalibu.com and use code MOM.